Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Simple Actions Group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So welcome everybody. It stopped raining, and that's a good thing. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing step three. And just before we get into that, Crystal kindly agreed to come along and talk this evening along with myself. And this meeting started up in the summer of last year in David's house, and it was really from a desire to try to share experience, strength, and hope on the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as might be done when with a sponsee at Starbucks, for example, and to try to keep it simple and focus in on the simple actions of recovery. And we are not experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There are people here tonight who know a lot more about it than either of us do, and that's great. So we're not really here to teach anybody about the book Alcoholics Anonymous, just simply to share our own experience and hope it might be helpful. So anyway, tonight we're going to look at step three, and step three is we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And we're going to start off on page 60 in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're going to be down at the paragraph which is the last paragraph that they read in the meetings when they read how it works, our description of the alcoholic. So I'll just go ahead and read it. Page 60. Sorry, I talk funny. 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. So, the book up to this point has really been trying to sell me and close me on steps one and two, and so this is really a nice little summary, I suppose, of all the pages up until then to some extent, and the A, B's and C's that we read at every meeting. Sometimes when the heat's really on, you know, in sobriety, I'm a guy that really doesn't like reality much at times, and sometimes when my backside's really on fire, I find myself on my knees just kind of going through these things in my head and maybe reading this. And what this, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. What does that mean for me as Graham? Well, I have a lot of evidence that when I pick up a drink of alcohol, something different happens to me. When I pick up a drink of alcohol, I want more alcohol. I get thirsty. I like drinking. I don't just like drinking, I like getting really drunk. I like it, I enjoy it, I find it thrilling. I find it like, I don't know if you've ever ridden a motorcycle. I find it like riding a motorcycle really fast in the summer with a t-shirt on. That's a I get a kick out of that. That's what it's like when I drink. It feels exciting and it's kind of dangerous. And I like that. So once I start, you know, I get thirsty and I can't really control how much I drink most of the time. And usually I'm going to drink a lot, far too much. And I can't guarantee my behavior. And on my own, I can stop drinking, but I can't stay stopped. I always go back to it. And I didn't realize the reason I always went back to it was because I really don't like being sober. I don't like this world or any of you people, really. It's very disappointing to me. And, you know, what a great disappointment this whole thing is. And here I am, a part of it, born in the wrong family, in the wrong country, in the wrong century, you know. It just gets worse after that. So that's kind of my view of the world, left to my own devices, and alcohol just turns the colour up and makes it fun. And I didn't realise that's what was going on. So the point I'm trying to make is drink was just a symptom of the problem. The problem was me sober, and I didn't realise that's what an alcoholic was. If you've got a drinking problem, just stop drinking. There's the door, goodbye. You never need to come back here, you lucky devil. Just leave, you'll feel better. Just don't drink anymore. Me, when I stop drinking, that's when it gets bad. That's when I start to feel. And that's really the problem. That's what makes me an alcoholic. So anyway, and then B, no human power could have relieved her alcoholism. I'll just very briefly rattle off some ways that I tried to relieve my alcoholism. And some of these, and I wish these were just when I was drinking, okay? I know there's spiritual good people in here who don't do any of this stuff, but me, I'm sorry, I'm flawed. So some ways that I tried to relieve my alcoholism is spending money, other people's money, my parents, for example, my money, whatever, just buy stuff. Let's just buy some stuff. That'll make me feel better. Having relationships with people, you know, having sex with people, having relationships with them, you know, as much as possible. That can temporarily relieve my alcoholism. Moving jobs. You know, going to college, not going to college, moving jobs, moving towns, moving countries, moving continents. These are ways that I've tried to relieve my alcoholism. Going to see a therapist who told me about little Graham, you know? Oh, little Graham wasn't loved when he was a kid. Oh, that's why that's what he told me. I'm screwed up because my mum and dad didn't love me when I was a little kid in the right way that I needed to be loved. So I tried therapy for a year and I milked that for everything I could get out of it and ended up using it against my parents and this crazy drama that was going on in my mind. Used my therapy to punish my mum and dad. I've been to the doctor before, and after a complete physical, the doctor said, all I can offer you is some pills. And I don't think you should take them. He said that should go to AA. So, you know, and then I've tried religion as well. You know, and I tried religion, and there's nothing wrong with religion. I was saved, you know, in a 1,500-year-old abbey in Scotland, I was saved. You know, St. Columba trod those hallways, for goodness sake. And I was saved there, and I think I was drunk 2 days later. I was actually stealing the wine off them. So, you know, no matter where I go and what I do, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I'm always left with me, I end up feeling like killing myself again. That's what happens. I behave badly and I feel ashamed and I want to die. It always comes back there. And I don't know what to do. And then it says that God could and would if he were shot. And as somebody pointed out to me tonight when I was chatting to a group of friends before the meeting, I was an atheist. So the word God was a kind of a deal breaker for me, you know, this idea of God. And thank God for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody else pointed out to me this week that the closest I'll come to this day to admitting that God's working in my life is saying, you know, there was a bizarre series of coincidences today. But the bottom line is, what it's telling me is that if I will just seek a power greater than me, God, a spirit of the universe, a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, if I will just seek that, then I can get help here. I can be relieved of alcoholism. And what I think that means is not only relieved of the drinking part of this illness, which is that I don't want to drink anymore. I haven't wanted to drink for a long time. So I'm relieved of that. But I think I can also be relieved to a greater or lesser extent of a lot of the symptoms of being sober, the uncomfortability with being sober. That's definitely been my experience over time. It has got more comfortable most of the time to be sober than it used to be in a dramatic way. It's easy for me to forget how uncomfortable it was to be 10 days sober, you know, just about to explode. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Crystal.
Thanks, Graham. Hello, everybody. My name is Crystal. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Crystal.
You know, the funny thing is like step three, I had a problem with God here. I came here believing that there was never, ever, ever going to be a God, period. No God, not in my life. Didn't want it. Didn't want to have anything to do with those religious people that were trying to shove Jesus down my throat. And what that looked like was that I held them in contempt. I was very angry when I walked in here, you know. And I didn't really want to hear anything you people had to say unless you were going to tell me how to drink successfully without getting in trouble. And to get me out of the trouble I was in. Because I wanted you to do it. I didn't want to have to do it. You know, making, and on that first paragraph, being convinced, you know, so how did I get convinced? You know, well, I like Graham and quite a few other people I know really love to drink. It made me feel powerful, you know, because I was socially inept. I never fit in anywhere. I was a part of like every clique that there was in high school, like the nerds, the jocks, the cheerleaders, the, you know, the skaters, the druggies. I was a part of all those cliques. But the thing is I would go and I would act, you know, I would be what I thought that they wanted me to be in the certain situations and the times that we were together. And then I would move on when I felt that they were getting too close to finding out who the real Crystal was, because I was so afraid that you guys wouldn't like me that I had to pretend to be what I thought you wanted me to be. And when I couldn't keep the show up anymore, I had to move on and try something different. I never realized how easy it is just to be myself, and if you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't, you know, but that was a lesson that I had to learn the hard way. So when I took my first drink, I wasn't worried about whether you people like me or not. I could care less. You guys weren't important. Mm-hmm. That warm, fuzzy feeling that grew in my chest, and the fact that people laughed at the stupid and silly, insane things that I did, and that all of a sudden I was, you know, boys found me attractive, and girls wanted to be my friend, and all of these things happened for me, and I felt like alcohol was the missing link. Mm-hmm. When I drank, I was on top of my game. I was on top of the world, and you people were like, I owned you. I owned you. That was it. Every bar I walked into was my bar, and if you guys didn't do what I thought you should be doing, there was going to be a fight that broke out at the end of the night. You know, and my ego was so big, but on the inside, I was just broken and frightened. And, you know, making, so being convinced, what that looked like in my life was that I, you know, there were several series of events where I would drink and nothing bad would happen, and then I would drink and I got in trouble. And, you know, I drank again very shortly thereafter. I had my first two DUIs were like a 2 weeks apart. You know, 14 months later, I had my third DUI. And once that all started happening, you know, I was in a series of lockups, and my mom didn't find out about the first one until I went to jail for my second one. And then she found out about the first one. And I hadn't talked to her in so many years that she was just like, what's going on with you? And, you know, I got out of jail and I tried to stay sober on Jesus for a while, and that didn't work. And, I come out and I meet a guy, right? And he convinced me that he could solve my problem. And I still didn't realize at that time what my problem was. And then I figured kids would solve my problem, and I figured marriage would solve my problem. So I did all of that, and my problem still wasn't solved. So I tried to drink a couple more times, and, you know, with kids and a new family, it wasn't very often that got to happen. And then, you know, I would walk home like 10 miles drunk from the bar while my husband's driving around the neighborhood looking for me. And he's like, you know, and then we get in a fist fight. He's like, I was so worried about you. I don't care. Pow! You know, and then, I mean, just stupid, retarded things happened. And then I have to get my license back. And, you know, I had tried everything. You know, I didn't go to treatment programs because I couldn't afford treatment programs. I hadn't lost anything because I didn't have anything. You know, and then I have these two little kids that need my love and affection, and I don't have anything to give to them. And I figure I need to do something about that. So I start going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, it wasn't my first time around, and so I try to drink and go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that didn't work out. And then, you know, I go out of town and try to drink out of town and said, I'm only going to drink out of town. And I came to the point where I was dead on the inside. I had no will and no hope to live. I did not want to be a part of, and I had tried everything I could to solve my problem on my own without the help of you crazy, happy, freaking people that were lying about being sober. And so I come in and I start taking some direction, and I get a sponsor and I start working these steps, and I was convinced at that point that I was an alcoholic. You know, that I had a problem that I could not solve myself. That every time I took a drink, I couldn't tell you where I was going to end up, how much I was going to drink, and where I was going to be at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. What I was going to be doing. And, you know, so I was alcoholic and I couldn't manage my own life. That's a big check mark. And then no human power. So I get sober and I try the relationship and I try the kids and I try buying things and I try keeping my bills in order. I try not keeping my bills in order. I try, you know, being the perfect AA member. No cussing, you know, no cleavage. No showing of the leg above the ankle. I'm serious, people. I mean, I was trying to be a nun in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought that that's what would relieve me of my alcoholism. I thought that if I didn't do this thing perfectly, that it was going to come and the other shoe was going to drop, and I was going to get drunk all over again, which happened because I was trying to do it perfectly and it was killing me. And so I'm there. So the only thing I have left is God. And I'm like, shit. Because I didn't want to believe in God. I didn't want to have anything to do with that. You people could use God all you wanted to. So it says, you know, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after. Now, to me, that means before and after I stopped drinking. So the same things were happening in my life after I put the drink down. I was miserable. I wanted to kill you people. I never wanted to have anything to do with you. I thought that you were all stupid, and I wanted to run you over with my car. And that wasn't just a few specific people. That was pretty much any human being I ran across. And that was kind of scary because I didn't feel anything but anger and rage. You know, I didn't feel compassion for you or your problems. If you were sick, grow a pair, you know? And it was just like, that's how I lived my life for a very long time. And then I come in here, my sponsor says, believe that I believe. And I could do that. It didn't have to be God. And then some unexpected series of events started happening in my life. I started caring about you people. I started wondering what other people's was happening in other people's lives and if I could be helpful to them, which totally blew my mind because I never in a million years thought I would care about another person, ever. And so this starts happening, and then people point out to me, because of course I don't see these things that are happening right off the bat, and I would react differently to something that somebody said, or I would call my sponsor before I took any action. And she was like, do you know what you just did? And I was like, what did I just do? What did I do wrong? Because of course I'm always doing something wrong. And she's like, you paused before you reacted. And I was like, oh, is that what that looks like? You know? And then, you know, serenity happens while I'm sitting looking at the Christmas tree in my house and there's nothing going on, there's nothing wrong. And I'm like, it's the most uncomfortable feeling in the world. And I call my sponsor and I'm like, what the hell is going on with me? I was like, am I about to take a drink? And she was just like, that's kind of what serenity looks like. And I was like, screw that crap. I was like, you can have that back. Because I'm so used to the chaos in my mind. When I don't have it, I need it. I need to create it. And that's about this human power stuff. You know, I'm going to create it by getting into a relationship or thinking that a man can solve my problem or thinking that shopping can solve my problem, because I just recently went through this all over again. You know, I'm not okay with me, so I'm going to focus on you and show you all the things that you need to do better. And the only thing that relieves me of that is a close and conscious contact with this power, this energy in these rooms, which comes to me when I talk to you guys. When I look you in the face and say, I screwed up. I think that I have a problem with this. I do not know how to solve my problem, and I need your help. And then people are honest with me, and I'm like, screw you. You know, and I'm like, you're right. I love you, but screw you all at the same time. And then I start to do something differently, just one little thing at a time, maybe for a day. And then the next day, it's a little bit easier. And the next day, it's a little bit easier. And then you know what? The obsession's been lifted, for whatever that obsession may be. And I am able to function and be a part of life as God sees fit, not as I see fit. Thanks.
Thank you. We're just going to continue right under that, still on page 60. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God so we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. And the interesting thing to me is that it doesn't say that this is when I'm drinking. So, we start to get the analogy of being an actor, you know, and basically being a phony and pretending and having a double life or a triple or quadruple or quintuple life, depending how much I'm not talking to other people. And that played out with me in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I found myself between 5 and 7 years sober with my AA life and then my other life, which resembled my drinking life, except I wasn't drinking. And I was not talking to people in AA about that because I'm 5 years sober. I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be living this way. I can't talk to anybody about this. They'll judge me. And I got sicker and sicker and sicker. It's a very uncomfortable place to be. And I think somewhere in that, through all that pain and discomfort and self-inflicted misery, I think the pain that caused me, I seemed to come out the other side of that, still sober, recommitted to Alcoholics Anonymous, recommitted to God, I believe. But really what had happened in there was I had started to accept myself as imperfect and flawed. And I don't know how that happened, but it happened somewhere in then. And later on, some other things happened in my life, which again allowed me to see that we're all flawed and imperfect, and we're doing the best we can today. Otherwise, we would do better, right? So anyway, being convinced of all of this, being convinced was a tedious process. I drank for 12 years and wound up in AA. And I think when I came to AA, and my experience is, for me, it was at the first meeting I went to. I know it's not like that for everybody, but my experience is as valid as anybody else's. The first time I went to AA and people talked about what happened when they got drunk, I was like, oh my God, there's other people like me. I really thought that the people that had taken me to the meeting, I really believed that they had perhaps got together with the group before I came into the room and talked to them about my problems. I really, really believed that. I'm not just making that up. That was a thought that was, I was like, wow, they told all these guys about me. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, that's a power greater than me right there. That identification just cut through whatever it is I think I know and just floored me. And that was really the start of me getting sober, I think, at that point there in Alcoholics Anonymous. The big problem I have here is this thing about understanding God. I love to intellectualize things and I love to understand things. So when I read this, because I'm a rocket scientist, and I read this and I'm like, oh, okay, I need to understand God before I can do step 3. So then I go and buy a bunch of books on God and start reading them on my own, of course, and just get really, really confused because I don't understand God. It didn't dawn on me at that time, like humans have been around for I don't know how long, 100,000 years, Homo sapiens or whatever, and they've always worshipped some sort of power greater than themselves as far as we know. But none of them ever really claimed to understand that or expected to understand it, except me, you know. I think I should just, okay, I'll understand God and then I'll do the rest of the steps. You know, that's like my project, and it'll probably take me 2 or 3 weeks, you know. So the guys in AA helped me with that. But I have to tell you, I really struggled with that for years in AA. You know, it wasn't something that just suddenly, oh, okay, I'm good. Probably the first 10 years or so, this was a recurrent thing, especially in the first 5 years, coming back to this God thing. But I have to tell you, the people in AA told me to pray, and I prayed. I was convinced that my life running self-will was a disaster. I felt like killing myself. I hurt everybody, my parents, my sisters, women lucky enough to date me, ruined friendships, you name it, because of my drinking and the way I behaved when I wasn't drinking, the way I treated people. I was constantly in collision with people, and in my mind, they were always wrong. I was a victim. And I just was constantly trying to arrange everything to suit myself. It comes back to this idea of the actor. It's absurd. This is like a theater, you know, and I'm an actor. I'm maybe in the chorus up there. And in the chorus, you get a script and you just sing the song. And what I do is the director's sitting down here at the rehearsal. I come down and maybe punch the director and tell him to get out. And then all these other people are kind of looking around like, what's this guy doing? Who is this guy? Is he German? What's going on here? And, you know, and now I'm sitting down in the director's chair and I'm like, okay, this is how it's going to be. And it's chaos because I've never directed a play. I don't know what I'm doing. And the thing's just a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. And that's really how I run my life. I run my life just like that. I'm in charge. There's no such thing as God. That's for weak-minded fools. I'm God, and I'm gonna get what I can out of this, and I'm gonna make these people suffer like I'm suffering. I'm gonna make these people give me what I want. And that's really the way I ran my whole life. And I really believed that if I just tried harder, things would be better. And I'm still like this to this day, you know. I'll say things and do things. I'm very manipulative. I know people in here will find that impossible to believe, but you know, I really like to get my own way. I don't like it when I'm not getting my own way. And when I'm not getting my own way, I've got some strategies to try and get you to do what I want you to do. And at first, they're nice strategies. You know, I maybe flatter you or, I don't know, do something nice for you so that you'll do something nice in return. But then really, when it comes down to it, I'm just going to be really mean, you know, and maybe bitch you out or something like that, you know, in front of a bunch of people. Yeah, thanks, Graham. Thanks for sharing. So, you know, and let me tell you this, I haven't drank for 15 years. Put me in the right circumstances and I will react like that today. I will do it. I'll kick off. And, you know, fortunately, like Crystal said, there's been a lot of improvement. And I don't want to jinx myself, but, you know, it's been some time since I did that. But... yeah. Tick, tick, tick. Did you?
Yeah, it has not been a while since I've done that. It has not been a while since I've done that. And I, you know, I have I'll have 4 years coming up shortly, hopefully, God willing, unless I continue acting the way I have been. And what that looks like in my life is I had this obsession with this person, you know, and I thought that this person could solve, you know, fill all those missing holes in my life. And I was gonna, you know, because I'm God, I was gonna convince this person. And what that looked like is I was gonna suffer. I was gonna suffer enough so that he could see that I loved him tremendously. You know, and I was going to be miserable just so he knew that his smile would brighten my day. And, you know, so I did these things. I was forever trying to arrange our lives so that we could constantly, you know, be in interaction with each other. I was constantly... you know, trying to manipulate other people to help me in my quest. I knew that I was the one for him, and he just couldn't see it. Well, considering that he hadn't, you know, completed the 12 steps and he had like a year sober, that probably didn't help a whole lot. And, you know, but I just knew that I could save him. I just knew that if he would just listen to me and do the things that I did, because I was being so helpful, that I would change his life and he would become one with God. And it would be me that made it happen. And I was, I did all of these things. I was very virtuous, you know. I was saving myself for this person so that he knew when he was ready, I would be virginal for him. And I was kind and considerate, and I would do things for him, and I would make sure that he knew through my actions, because actions speak louder than words, that he was important to me. And then, you know, he wouldn't do what I expected him to do, so I would be radically bitchy and horrible to him and treat him very, very unkind. And then expect him to like me even more after that. And I would, and you know, the funny thing was that I was suffering all of these things. I was resentful. I was pitying myself. I was, you know, I had all of the symptoms of untreated alcoholism because I was depending on this man to keep me sober and happy and joyous and free. And people kept telling me, do something different. And I'm like, no, I love him. But what happened was that I got to that jumping off place in this relationship where I couldn't do what I was doing anymore because it was just too painful and affecting other people in my life. I didn't want to hang out with you guys. I didn't want to go to meetings. I didn't want to be a part of. I was showing up to do those things, but my heart wasn't really in it. I was doing it because I practiced it for a little while, and I knew that if I didn't, I would drink again. So I start doing things different. I start following suggestions. And you know what? The obsession becomes less and less, and to the point that today it's not really there, and I realize just how much of an idiot I really am. You know? Just how much of a delusional mind that I can live under still today in sobriety over anything. So the point for me, what I learned was that I am not in charge, that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Anybody else's life that I try to run on my self-will will hardly be a success. And that I am constantly in collision with life in general, unless I am following the dictates of a higher power in my life. And when I start to do those things, things straighten out and magical things happen in my life. And things are put in front of me that I couldn't have even dreamed of and asked for. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to go to page 62 now. And here it is, page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. We arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Wow, it's pretty heavy. One time I had this guy I was sponsoring, and I had him over for lunch in my house in Scotland, and we were talking about this. And when I put it to that guy that he was selfish and that was the problem, we were reading this, he actually stormed out my house. He was like, screw you, I'm not selfish, I'm a nice guy. And he got up and left. And the reason I'm telling you that is that's me, that's my reaction to this suggestion that my life's a disaster is my fault. I'm very much opposed to that point of view. I don't believe it when I come to AA, and sometimes today I still don't like to believe it, that my troubles are of my own making. Let's meditate on that for a while. Yeah, family finances, my fault. Wife upset, my fault. Lost my job, my fault. Yep, whole bunch of stuff. I don't like that. It's uncomfortable. It makes me look bad. So it really says that the selfishness is actually so extreme that it kills me, but it's true. I don't think that I'm selfish. I could hook me up to a polygraph and ask me, Graham, are you selfish? And I'm like, no, I'm a nice guy, and the needles don't move. I just don't see it on my own. And I think I've got better at seeing it somewhat in recovery. But a lot of times I don't see it until after it happened. And then I'm like, oh, I was being selfish again. And you know, so I think there's this idea that I'm going to come into AA it's a strange idea, is that I'm going to be perfect and I'm going to be able to control myself. And I'm going to be able to control my recovery, you know. And I'm going to intellectualize all of this. So it talks on about God. And it talks about, on my own, I just can't do this. It keeps pounding me with that idea. It says I can't even get rid of the selfishness, even a little bit on my own. I can be unselfish for, if I've been really, really bad, I can be unselfish for maybe half a day or a day, you know? And then it all comes off unreal, it derails again. But I really want to talk about this idea of we had to have God's help, because that really was a big problem for me, having to have God's help. And I think in Alcoholics Anonymous, my experience of being in AA is there's a tremendous mystique built up around the word God, and a tremendous mystery, and it's almost like, oh, it's a secret, you know, that God's not a secret. God's just for us that are in the know. You guys over there, yeah, we'll maybe tell you one day if you keep coming back. And that's, I always felt like I was on the outside. And I'm somebody that prayed since I first got a sponsor. I prayed every single day on my knees in the morning and at night. I read page 86. I did the prayers. I did the prayers that they told me to do. But I always felt like I think I was looking for a warm, fuzzy feeling. Then I would know that I had a relationship with God, because I would feel good all the time and just be nice to everybody. And I didn't feel good, and I wasn't being nice to everybody. So therefore, I don't have a relationship with God. And the guy that I think saved my life when I was about 7 years sober and I was going off my head in sobriety, 7 years away from alcohol with untreated alcoholism, he sat down and listened to me explain my double life, just tell him what I was doing, just puked it all over him. And at the end of my 5-minute explanation, he just nodded and he said, AA's full of people like you. You've got untreated alcoholism. And take me, Father.
That was Star Wars, by the way.
You've got... See? You've got untreated alcoholism, and the fantastic news is, if you'll just recommit yourself... And this was the first time I heard this, to the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can have a very powerful spiritual experience that means that you don't have to drink one day at a time for the rest of your life. And you can act reasonably sane most of the time. And I was like, wow. And then he laid out the simple actions. And the simple actions were really things that they told me the first time I ever went to AA. And I'm like waiting with bated breath. Here we go. I'm getting the juice now. 7 years I've held on, and now I'm getting it. It's probably going to involve a different book, like a page 106, a secret part of the big book. You know? Anyway, it didn't. And what he said was, you know, God, if you want a relationship with God, you need to do these things in AA consistently, and you'll have a relationship with God. And unfortunately for people like me, or fortunately, I don't know which it is, my experience of God is absolutely tied to my activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. Take me away from AA and the simple actions of AA, and now I'm thinking I have an experience of God. I'm up here again. And this is so much about doing. So what are the simple actions? Let's just keep it simple. The simple actions are, I need to go to AA meetings. I need to keep going to AA meetings. That's where it seems to happen for me. It doesn't happen at home on my own. It seems to happen here with you. So it's important that I regularly go to AA. It's important to get a sponsor and work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a really key part to all of this. And, you know, to meet the sponsor perhaps weekly and work through the steps. That's how it was done with me. And the other thing that's important is to be in a home group. And this is a home group, and some of us joined it, and all we do is we show up a bit early and set it up, and we try to reach out to people that come here that we don't know and tell them there's a way to recover from alcoholism. And we just try to look out for each other and participate in this home group. And the other thing is to say those simple prayers, regardless of the condition of my belief or otherwise in God or a power greater than me. Just pray. I don't believe in God. That doesn't matter. Just pray. So I've done that. And I think the other thing, and this is key to the whole thing, is to try to get out of myself by helping other people. And that really seems to allow God's help to come into my life. It doesn't seem to, it does. It allows God's help to come into my life and help me. And, you know, I'm not going to bore you all to death. Who in here who's been sober a while hasn't had some adversity of various kinds? Who hasn't been swept away by an attack of selfishness, you know? And then thought, oh, you know, when I'm in the pain, the resulting pain, it's like, oh, what am I going to do now? But I have to tell you, in all of those situations, through all that time and the different feelings and whatever I had, these simple actions have never, ever let me down. And I've been able to continue to do them imperfectly, but I've been able to continue to do them over time. And I haven't drank. And I haven't behaved like a lunatic most of the time. So that's really my experience with this. And I think sometimes, you know, can bang the atheist drum a bit much. When I was maybe 2 or 3 years sober, my sponsor, John, cornered me. And he was like, so, you don't believe in God? And I'm like, well, John, I'm not sure. He's like, well, how long is it since you drank? And I'm like, well, 3 years. So that was you that did that? No, you think you can do that on your own? No, I can't do that. Okay. And you've got a job. And he rhymed off all these things that were going good in my life. And I had to concede that that was definitely as a result of coming to AA and the power that we find here. Crystal?
I had a hard time swallowing that most of my trouble was of my own making. But then the selfishness, you know, because I really did help people. I really did. I helped you to see just how much of an ass you were all the time. And the greatest thing about that is I really didn't think that that was selfish. I really didn't think manipulating and using you to get what I wanted was selfish. I didn't get that. It just didn't click in my head. It's because, you know, that was normal. That's how I grew up. That's what my parents did. You know, I just thought everybody did that. And then, and I think that's why I didn't like religious people so much, because they were really trying to do something different. You know, they were trying to be helpful. They were trying to do the very best they could to live up to the principles that they learned in their religion. And I'm like, why in the hell are you going to do that? You could just do this. You know? And this is much easier. And it happens a lot faster, like now, because that's when I need it. You know, whatever it is, I need it now. I'm not waiting for shit. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, my first period of sobriety, I'm at 3.5 years, and my sponsor is just preaching kindness and gentleness. And I'm not kind or gentle in the least. I don't come to the table with kind or gentle. So I'm here and I'm trying on my own willpower to be kind and gentle to you idiotic people. And I'm failing miserably. And of course, I'm judging myself. You know, I'm beating myself up about it. I just suck at this AA thing. I can't do it right. So I might as well just drink. And that's what I did. And then I come back in here. And I realize, I am shown through my sponsor's experience that I don't have the power to be nice or kind or grateful. I don't have the power to love or to care about you. I don't have the power to be friendly. I don't have the power to be a mother. I don't have the power to do any of those things without a power greater than myself in my life. And that is what has repeatedly been shown to me through my own experience, is that if, you know, God is everything or else he is nothing. And that keeps smacking me in the face. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, I think I have these little issues that come up in my life, just the little itty bitty ones, no big deal, you know? And the big things, I'm like, you can have all that crap, you know? But the little things are what get me in trouble the most. Those little itty-bitty things that I think, I got this, God, don't worry about it, I got this. And then it becomes the biggest damn rut in the road, and I've wrecked my car in it. Every time. And the funny thing is I really like being able to be imperfect. This program allows me to show up as screwed up and insane as I can be and just keep trying. And then you people like accept me for that, mm-hmm. which was totally weird. You know, the thing is that if I want to be nice and kind and I want to treat people like I think they should be treated, you know, patience, tolerance, understanding, I have to depend on something else for that because I ain't got it. I don't have it at all. And when I do show up and continue doing the simple actions of this program, those things are granted to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to love and be a friend and show up and be helpful and think about you and your day and be a mother and an employee, a worker among workers, a friend among friends, no better than or no worse than anybody else. And that is the magic. You guys show me that. I didn't just show up and figure it out. You guys show me how to do these things. Being part of a home group showed me how to be a worker among workers and a member of a team. You know, the unity part. And you guys show me what love looks like and what real friendship looks like and all of these things that I didn't know when I got here. So that's all I got.
Thank you. We're now going to go to page 63, and I'm going to read the paragraph. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And, you know, just to finish up, this decision that I'm making, the decision I'm making is not to understand God. The decision I'm making, as I see it now, is a decision to take these simple steps, to continue with the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, not knowing what the outcome's going to be, but I'm going to do this. Because if I don't do it, I'm screwed. I'm in between a rock and a hard place. I don't have any choice. I know what that looks like, alcoholism. I don't know what I'm going towards, but I'm just going to do it because these guys are doing it, so I'm going to do it. That's the decision. And we hear a lot of people pontificating in meetings about turning it over. How do I turn it over? Oh, how do I turn it over? And, you know, what's the topic at the meeting tonight? I need help turning it over. And then we get a big advice session. Well, this is how I turn it over. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what on earth are you people talking about? Keep coming back. And my understanding of this and how this has played out in my life is how I turn things over is I am redirected, often by my sponsor or my friends in AA, I'm redirected back to the solution. And this, what is the solution? Go to some meetings. Reach out to a guy at the meeting. Say some simple prayers. Take the steps with your sponsor. Participate in your home group. That's the solution. And I'm redirected back to that. And then mysteriously, these problems, these big deals, seem to... I'm just like, oh, maybe I should feel frightened about that. You know? I think about it and I'm like, why do I not feel frightened about not having a job? Why is that not terrifying me? Well, I don't know. Let's call some new guys and see how they're doing today. You know? And time passes and things change. So there you go. There's a couple of minutes left, Crystal.
You know, the funny thing was when I got on board with the God thing, right? I believed that my sponsor believed, and then I had enough proof for me. I got to that point where I had enough proof for me that I could be on board with the power greater than myself thing, this God thing, right? And then I go about having to have a name for it. and not having to know what it looked like, and what color hair and eyes, and what exactly I was supposed to believe, because I needed everything like written down. What I was trying to do was put it in a box so that I could contain it and put it up on a shelf and use it, take it down and use it when I needed to, because that was comfortable for me, because this whole not knowing what's going to happen next in my life is really uncomfortable. This getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, because most of the stuff that I need to do, the right thing for me to do, is uncomfortable. And, you know, so once it took me like 6 months, and I'm like, what is God? And I did all of that stuff. I bought every book I could find on God. I went to Buddhist church. I went to Taoist churches. I went to, you know, Catholic churches and Episcopalian churches and temples and wherever I could find a different religion, and I was going to become a master of all of them. So if I just grabbed all of it together in a big group, I would know everything I needed to know about God. And I would have it figured out, and I would write a book about it and sell it back to you people, and then you would know. And I would be rich. But what happened was that I stopped fighting the idea that I had to know. And when I stopped fighting the idea that I had to know, God was right there the whole time. Didn't need to find him. He wasn't lost. All I had to do was seek to understand the principles of this program a little bit better. That's all I had to do. And then God shows up, all this miraculous, magical stuff happens, and I'm like, look at, would you look at that? And when I continuously do those things, that's what happened. God shows up in my life, and everything, those big things that I was, you know, gritting my teeth over, oh my God, this is a disaster! I don't have to be frightened of anymore, because I don't need to know. And I don't need to be comfortable. And my feelings don't mean that I can't go out and continue to do the actions. Mm-hmm. And that right there is what the simple actions look like to me. No matter how I feel, regardless of what my life looks like, if I keep doing this stuff, God shows up and everything turns out fine. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, thanks everyone. I'm going to pass these baskets around here. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yep.
Hi, I'm John, the alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Want to remind everybody, as well in advance, please put on your calendars, Saturday, June 22nd. The annual Gratitude and Action event will be held at Ghent United Methodist Church starting at 9:30 in the morning. We'll have the state delegate there. We're going to have multiple workshops and a speaker, free food. Please come out and join us. Should be a lot of fun. And I'm also selling raffle tickets that will fund that. It is free to attend, but raffle tickets to fund that. They're $1, and it's the winner will get to go to the Oceanfront Conference for free. So see me after the meeting if you want to.
Thanks, John. Abby?
I'm
Abby. Hi, Abby.
This upcoming Saturday at 11 a.m., District 14, Special Needs Committee is having a workshop, and this workshop is for all of you. We're looking for input as to what special needs may be in the city and surrounding areas. So please come and bring experience. We'll have a couple speakers and some food, and at Christ in St. Luke's at 11 a.m. this Saturday.
Thanks, you.
Thanks, Abby.
Any other announcements? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand, please.
What?
Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety we'd like to welcome you?
My name's Jason.
name's Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey
Darren.
Darren,
welcome.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey
Mike,
welcome. Anybody else? Okay. Oh. Hi Mark, welcome.
Hi Mark.
I'd like to point out that literature is available. It's over beside the coffee. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship is in AA, is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Closing. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza on Colley Avenue. If you don't know where it is, ask one of us. We'll point you in the right direction. It is $5 pizza night, so you can gorge yourself for $5. And nobody volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Hi, I'm John McCullough.
Hi,
John.
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 Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us, asking in the morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. Make sure that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in fellowship with the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks for reading.
Thanks,
John.
John.
And for those that would care to join us, we're going to form a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. That was great, Crystal. Good job. Thanks for doing that. It's a bit nerve-wracking at times, but you did a great job.
I don't know what shift this is.
Okay, Crystal, you want to say the Lord's Prayer?
Sure. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.